the nation's deathbed. What does that mean? It sounds pretty dramatic, that right. The nation's deathbed.
It's pretty straightforward, and that's essentially what we're trying to convey is happening, that this nation, Canada, is literally on the brink of extinction. That's why we chose the nation's deathbed, because that's really the issues that we're faced with. That's where things are heading, so we felt it to be a fitting title. Plus, it's kind of catchy, and you know, people seem to like death these days, but...
Well, you're talking about that the nation is on its deathbed.
Right.
And when you talk about that, we're talking about issues such as the Security and Prosperity Partnership, right. The North American Union. What is the SPP, and is the North American Union a threat?
Right. So first of all, you have to be aware that there is an agenda, generally, for a new world order. Maybe a lot of the listeners have heard that term before. But really, the agenda is an ancient plan that is really essentially about uniting everything together into one world government, one world cash system, one world religion. So in order to accomplish these goals that they have, especially with one world government, things need to be merged into fewer and fewer hands. So the SPP and NAFTA and the North American Union plan is just really another step towards this goal of a one world government, because when you want everything united into one, you have to slowly put together the pieces of the puzzle. And the North American Union is certainly one of the big chunks that they're working on putting together. It's similar to the same thing they did with the European Union, which was really not that long ago. It was set in place maybe 8 or 9 years ago, something like that. But it's the same kind of plans to unite governments into fewer and fewer hands. Essentially, it's a centralization of power into fewer hands. And now Canadians are faced with that scenario where our governments is being merged into fewer hands.
Let's talk for a little bit about the things directly discussed in the film. Mm-hmm. That is the SPP, the NAU, the protest in Montebello, and the surveillance that surrounded mm-hmm. the lead-up and during it. There's a scene about halfway through the film where you and your brother travel to Ottawa and Montebello to get video of the demonstrations mm-hmm. and what surrounded it. And there's an unnerving scene where you are asked by police to stop filming, and then they mm-hmm. ask you for ID.
Mm-hmm.
So the question then becomes, is this something you've regularly experienced since then? And how many other people have you run into that have been basically asked, show your paper, citizen?
Yeah, that wasn't a first for me. I ran into that exact scenario when I went to the Bilderberg conference in Ottawa back in 2006, where I was merely just observing what was going on, and an officer pulled up and said, yeah, we need to see your ID. And I said, well, we're not doing anything wrong. And essentially, we didn't end up giving him our name or ID either. But yeah, in Ottawa, again, that happened. He said, you know, you guys, you know, no taping, you're not allowed to tape. And I know that, you know, we're standing on a sidewalk at that point, and it's completely, you know, in my rights to be filming. And I had already noticed cameras from the police filming us all throughout the day. So I was just thinking to myself, well, no, I don't really need to feel that I need to show you my ID. I mean, this isn't Russia or this isn't China. I shouldn't have to present my papers, like you say, just for walking down the street and, you know, filming government activity, really. So, yeah, I felt I, you know, didn't need to do that. So that's the position I took and stuck to it.
Every time one of these things comes up, a plan like NAFTA or FTAA, mm-hmm. SPP, the people promoting it go on and on about how this is eliminating tariffs, eliminating yeah. borders, eliminating barriers.
Yeah.
And yet, the borders are still there. It gets more and more difficult to cross the borders unless you get your papers, your right. ID card, where they have this thing called the Nexus card now.
Mm-hmm.
Deanne Richardson, yeah. She talks about the elimination of internal barriers while this big external barrier, this Fortress North America, mm-hmm. is being constructed. And yet we know that the borders are still there, that right. we're required to show our citizenship in a particular country, that people who travel looking for better work who end up getting mm-hmm. worse work are considered illegal, and there's never any talk about making them citizens. Is part of the plan perhaps using the Soviet model of having an internal passport, having your papers that tie you to a particular location, to a particular section of this North American Union? And why would anyone want to do that? Why not just wipe out the borders as a whole and let people travel freely?
Right. Well, they realize that some of these agendas that they're going for, the people are just all out going to reject and realize, no, we don't want that. We're not cool with that. So they realized a long time ago that you have to do it through small stages. It's conditioning, essentially. And through various means of propaganda, you know, through the media and education system and television and everything. And you basically manipulate their minds into believing that this is a good thing. And a lot of the mechanisms that they use to manipulate the overall consciousness of the people to make it think that this is good is sometimes order out of chaos is what they believe in. They believe if you can cause enough problems, enough pain and hate and suffering and this and that, then out of the ashes of such a problem will emerge their solution. And their solution will be, yes, that we unite with America and Mexico and we have the open border policy, and but you still need your national ID card in order to travel. And that's essentially the steps that they're taking to condition us to accept such a thing.
One of the things mentioned early in the film, and something that has come up before in Canadian politics, and indeed it's kind of a running issue, is water. We're sitting on loads of fresh water, probably one of the last major reserves in the world, because we know what humanity has done to the rest of the planet and this part of the planet. And one thing that keeps coming up is a desire by, primarily from the United States, to get fresh water shipments, you know, get control of the Great Lakes, you know, the Great Lakes diversion to the Ogallala Aquifer. And one of the people interviewed in the film talk about the idea of proportional sharing. That is that, you know, whatever percentage of the water resources we have available, we always have to hand over proportion to the United States. Why in hell would anyone sitting in Ottawa ever even entertain an idea like this? Like, again, what is in it for them? And why would they want to lock future generations into a system where they no longer have, where even they no longer have control over the resources?
I think a lot of them are not even aware of these kinds of provisions in the agreement, like the NAFTA, where that proportional sharing clause is in. Is you know, I wouldn't be surprised if many of the people pulling the strings haven't actually read it. You know what I mean? So they're probably not going to be aware of such a thing until basically it's too late, until it's to the point where you essentially just have to approve what they've already done.
And we see something like this developing in the European Union. Now there's a European Parliament and a Council of Europe that effectively makes rules with no legislative oversight, no opportunity to, for, you know, the however many million, hundreds of millions of people in Europe to counteract them, to deal with them effectively. We see similar structures starting to develop around other parts of the world. The push for an African Union, for example. The push, I'm sure at some point there'll be a push for an Asian Union. Why would they agree to a system where they're going to have to give away control of their resources, control, you know, like the ability to institute stricter regulations, or maybe better, you know, more environmental or labor, you know, better environmental law, better labor law, that their society may want. Why would they give away the right to do these things? What are they going to get in return for joining up with these power structures?
Right. Yeah. Like I said, maybe for lack of a better term, they will be tricked into it. As they look at it right now, it's, they would think, no, this doesn't make sense to me. I don't want to be a part of that. You know, I'd lose my sovereignty. We'd lose our right to rule. And, you know, we don't want anything to do with that. And the elite understand this is the mentality of the people, but they've learned how to manipulate that and turn it around. And unfortunately, a lot of that comes through an attack, per se. And it doesn't necessarily have to be any kind of a terrorist attack. Could be some sort of an economic crisis or a health pandemic or anything to get the people into fear. That's the first step, afraid. And then you offer the solution, which is, look, we need to band together, we need to join together, this is for your safety. So basically they'll be manipulated around to begin to think that this is a good idea, and maybe even to the point where they'll demand such a thing, that you know, they can turn it around to the point where they'll demand to have these kind of restrictions set in place, really.
Don't the people running these companies, don't the people sitting in these houses of parliament and the legislatures, you know, working with these lobbyists, don't they have to drink the same water, breathe the same air, live on the same planet as the people that they otherwise don't care about? Why would they want to worsen things? Do you think that maybe they intend to take all the good stuff for themselves as well? How are they going to pull that off?
Well, sometimes it's hard to understand, because some people think it's all about money, some people think it's all about power. But what's important to understand is, for the real global elite who are really running things, they already have all the money, they already have all the power. So it's a bigger agenda than that. It's literally demonically driven. So it's beyond money and power. So I've gotten that question before, when, because there's an agenda to eliminate 80% of the world's population. Now, people have asked me, now, why would they want to do that? Wouldn't they want to keep people around so you can control them, manipulate them, make money off them? And it's a valuable question, but the reality is, it's beyond money, it's beyond power, and these guys are being driven from something beyond money and power.
The people that, you know, create these structures, and they create these power structures, these structures of manipulation, do they think they can evade the consequences of what they're creating forever? I mean, yeah, they can manipulate people within their lifetimes. They can create, you know, controlled media structures, structures that run off doublethink, that you know, define the discourse. They can, you know, they can even go as far as they want to try to divert as many resources under their control as possible. Mm-hmm. But I mean, ultimately, there has to be some kind of reaction, either among the populace, among a faction of the elite, even from the planet we live on itself. I mean, you can only pump so much crap into the water before it catches fire, like a river running through Cleveland, Ohio. Do they really? And I guess this is kind of asking your opinion. Do they really think they can get away with this?
Well,
forever?
Yeah, I think they themselves are deceived. they truly believe that we deserve to be controlled and manipulated. They essentially feel that they are gods, who have a divine right to rule over the rest of mankind. It's been no different with any civilization. You look into the past, whether it's the Babylonians or the Egyptians or, you know, the Alexander the Great, you know, the Romans, all of these civilizations have had people who have wanted to rule and power and control the rest of the world and all of the population. So it's really no different now. So yes, they essentially feel that they are unstoppable, and that there won't necessarily be any consequences for their actions. And a lot of them realize that they won't necessarily see the finished plan in their lifetime, but they're still proud to be a part of it all. And a lot of the times they realize, you know, the agenda will be carried on through their children, through the bloodlines that have been running down for thousands of years. The agenda continues on from their kids to their kids to their kids.
Now, there's a strong element in what you're describing of, on the part of the people carrying this out, a strong element of class, even a caste structure,
yeah,
of perhaps some degree of eugenicism.
Mm-hmm.
They may not be necessarily engineering themselves, but they think they are of better blood, perhaps.
Right.
They have the right to manipulate everyone. They are the Brahmins. They are the top of the structure.
Mm-hmm.
Are there people from the inside that are exposing this kind of thing? Are there people who, you know, are effectively, I guess Marx would call them class traitors, traitors to their class,
mm-hmm,
who are doing work to expose this idea, to try to stop it from happening, because they know what it will lead to?
Yeah, there has been pretty key whistleblowers. A big reason why we are now familiar with the Bilderberg group is because of a man named Jim Tucker, who's been following them for over 30 years, and he's been getting contact from an insider. Somebody who sees the agenda and sees the wicked ways behind what they're doing and wants no part of it. So what this guy's been doing is leaking information to Jim Tucker about where the meetings will be and when and what will be on the agenda. So yeah, it is good to know that there is some good in this upper levels of power. There still seems to be you know, some hope, some good guys lingering in there. I don't think everybody involved in, say, the CFR or Bilderberg or Trilateral Commission or these kind of groups are necessarily all evil and hell-bent on world domination. In fact, a lot of these guys who are really running the things believe that what they are doing is a good thing. They don't think it's wrong. You mentioned eugenics. Like, Hitler was a eugenicist. I feel that when he was murdering all the Jewish people, he truly believed that it was a good thing. He thought he was going to make the world a better place, for generations to come. I think he truly believed that what he was doing is a good thing. So a lot of these guys are deceived and manipulated into believing that what they are doing is for the better of the world.
Yeah, I guess, you know, when you talk about these kind of things, people immediately think you're talking about people in dark, dank, smoky rooms,
right,
rubbing their hands together, yeah, and cackling like Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
When you hear these people speak about what they're doing, they're talking about these grandiose terms, as if they are saving the future of the world, preserving the future, creating a better future,
right,
which oddly enough sounds like a lot of the bunk that, yes, Hitler spewed, a lot of the bunk that you hear from various religious fundamentalists and cultists.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it is very much the kind of thing you hear from people who run ostensibly reputable countries, ostensibly reputable organizations. I guess my question is it conspiracy or tendency? Like, is the drive to control the rest of the population? Yes, there are plans out there. Yes, there are plans been developed. But is it conspiracy between people who actively discuss this, or is it the tendency of people who have been born into certain places, who have manipulated their way into certain, degrees of power, to believe that they have the right to do these things? And it's, no one wants to ruin the party, so they have to carry it on.
Yeah, certainly I'd lean more towards tendency, for sure. Because when you start to look into the hierarchy of the global elite, and you look into where do they get their information from, and you find out that it turns out that most of these guys are into the occult, highly, deeply into the occult, and they revel in spirit communication is what they get involved with. So that's where a lot of these guys' information comes from. So they feel that they're tapping into something that is huge and is important and is really an amazing thing that they've tapped into here. But I feel that they themselves are being manipulated and deceived, essentially by the spirit world to rule the rest of the world, essentially.
All that stuff about the divine right of kings coming back in another form, effectively.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the deception comes that they are led to believe that they are like gods. So again, they truly feel that they have the divine right to rule the rest of everyone else.
Indeed, in the film, there are a diverse array of voices expressing their opposition to things like the SPP,
yeah,
to the NAU. People from as far around the political spectrum and compass as Jack Layton of the NDP, mm-hmm, to members of the John Birch Society in,
right,
the United States, organizations that normally you probably would never be able to find even in the same city.
Right.
Just talking to each other, never mind talking about their opposition to the same subject. So can you go a bit into, the shared concerns of people across, around the political compass about what is wrong with the SBP and the NAU and everything that follows on from that?
Yeah, well, the fact is that it affects three countries, really. So people in America are certainly aware of what's going on. People in Mexico are beginning to wake up to this agenda. And certainly Canadians seem to be really becoming more and more aware of what's going on. So, yeah, there is a big awakening happening between all three countries. That's why we see, we had the president of the John Birch Society in our film speaking out against it. We had, like you said, Jack Layton and Peter Julian from the NDP. We also have Connie Fogel of the Canadian Action Party. So all these different groups are trying to essentially say, look, we're faced with the problem and we need to get the word out. That press conference was awesome to have all those people together to talk about the issues together.
One thing that has been heavily discussed among activists and perhaps lamented among activists, especially in the wake of Montebello. Was the lack of mainstream media concern at all? We've been complaining about the mainstream media for all of us for some time now. But it seemed that for a period, probably from about, probably from the day that the Zapatista uprising started in 1994, up through sometime after the unfortunate, you know, the horror, you know, the tragic day of 9/11, that these movements opposed to tying all of humanity to a contract drawn up by a few were being taken seriously. You know, they were driving the agenda, which was something that, you know, horrified the hell out of the elite. Suddenly the idea that, oh my God, these dirty lower class people are actually being taken seriously. Mm-hmm. And it seems that in the past few years, that's kind of been shoveled aside. Mm-hmm. Suddenly it's back to being the realm of, oh, those wacky conspiracy theorists. Oh, yeah. You know, those wacky people in the streets, and I've got mine, Jack, and, you know, we don't need to hear all of that. So the question right. then becomes, what has proven effective in getting the word out about, you know, opposition to, you know, the further centralization of control, and what more can be done? Is there any hope for the mainstream media? You know, is it all up to alternative media and word of mouth? What has worked and what is going to work?
Yeah, I think there's certainly a new media and a new press arising. Certainly the internet, and a lot of times you get that, you know, well, you get your information from the internet, well, you're a conspiracy theorist. But people are beginning to realize that they're lied to every single day from mainstream media, so they're looking to other sources for information, and you know, the internet's a great spot if you know where to look. You know, there's tons of garbage you have to sift through, but essentially, yeah, there's a new press emerging, and that is key, because I don't know if there's necessarily hope for the mainstream media, and maybe the focus for activists is to shift to alternative media and to start your own websites or blogs, and maybe start looking into those things instead of watching, you know, CNN every day.
We have presumably fairly elected governments, because we're told that representative democracy is as good as it gets. You know, this is the, you know, maybe what was H.L. Mencken's line? You know, it's a bad system, but it's 8 times better than anything else we have. So we have three, presumably elected governments, George W. Bush, you know, accepted for the moment, let's put an asterisk by his name, of three ostensibly liberal democracies with varying degrees of social democracy, but, you know, presumably they all, you know, they're all built on promises of freedom and the ability to express yourself, and that you have a voice in the government, you have control through your representative. We have these three representative democracies that are going to tie 500 million people into a contract. A treaty is effectively an international contract. Mm-hmm. Into a contract that those 500 million will have no ability to amend. No, they're being kept out of the debate. Mm-hmm. They're going to be, they and their descendants will be stuck in that framework. Mm-hmm. And anyone they, you know, try to put into power afterward will be either be stuck with that framework, or those individuals will be already controlled.
Right.
They'll be, you know, already reaping the benefits of being involved with that power structure. Yeah. So the question, you know, then becomes, you know, is there a better system? Like, is there a way, you know, a way that we can organize our societies to resist this kind of mass control? Basically, can we reform our existing structures to try to make them better, more responsive? Is revolution the answer, perhaps? You know, ripping it all down and installing something presumably better.
Right. Yeah, there's certainly something needs to be done. I mean, people, I think, are beginning to aware that democracy itself is not necessarily a good thing. Democracy essentially is the illusion of choice. That's what people are given. It's the illusion of choice. The global elite realize that it's such an easily manipulatable mechanism, the idea of democracy, to manipulate the people into them thinking that they have an option and they have a choice. So certainly that whole system needs to be flipped upside down and turned around. Now, whether, you know, a revolution needs to take place, or what needs to take place to bring that kind of a change about, I don't know. But certainly we cannot continue in the way that we are going at this point, that's for sure.
Have you had much response to the film as of yet?
Yeah, the response has been really good. I mean, people really, really like the film. Certainly within the, you know, the movement, the truth movement, you know, we have people like Alex Jones who's been, you know, promoting the film. He's had our trailer on all of his websites, and, you know, we have other groups out there like Toronto Change, and certainly conspiracy culture is getting involved, and a lot of people, really, really good feedback from those kinds of people, but that's not necessarily our target market. We need to reach people who are not aware of it. So the feedback amongst the people who have already seen it, they think this is really well done, it's really well put together. But these are people who are already aware of the North American Union and the, you know, New World Order agenda. So the feedback from these people have been great. But again, we need to bring this to a wider audience, for sure.
And how do you do that?
Well, you do it by doing things like I'm doing right now. We're just kind of doing everything we can to try to, you know, we're set up certain distribution deals with an organization in the United States. We've gone into a couple stores now who are going to start selling our film, and just expand on getting the word out. I mean, doing more interviews and more. It's just all about. People need to be aware that this film exists, you know. So, yeah, we're just doing all we can to try to get the word out.